Massive welcome. My name's Pete, for those I haven't met. Together my wife, Bea, we lead the church here. So huge welcome if you're new or visiting. This is super exciting because this is Vision Sunday. A couple of times a year we take time out from our teaching series and we cast afresh the vision that we believe God's given us as a church. So I'm really excited about this season that lies ahead of us and want to share some of the things we believe that God's put on our heart as a community. But before we get going, this is a slight disclaimer. For those that have been at KXC for more than a year, a lot of this material will be familiar to you. That's because we just want to remind you of who we are and what we're about. And one of my heroes, a guy called David Pitches, who was the founder of New Wine. He was a bishop from Chile and then came back to the UK and led this church, St. Andrew's Chorley Wood. He would regularly be asked, like, oh, what's the vision of St. Andrew's? Like, where are we going? Like, where are we going as a church? To which his response would be, we're going nowhere. We're staying right here and we're going to be the church. And it's easy on Vision Sundays to sort of constantly articulate, oh, we're going here and then we're going there. And sort of right, we're moving around. And essentially we want to say from the get-go, our primary vision is to stay here and be the church for the sake of King's Cross, for the sake of those that don't know and Jesus. Our vision is to be the church. Which means whatever else we add to that, it comes under that umbrella. And we don't get to reinvent what church is. We've been given the blueprint for what church is in the New Testament, and we want to be faithful to that. And the best definition, at least I've found, for what the church is in the New Testament, because if you've read the New Testament, there's loads of metaphors for the church. It's a body, it's like a temple, it's a family, loads of metaphors, but not a neat definition. So the closest we probably get to a definition is in the Greek word that's used for the church. And the Greek word is ekklesia. It's a compound word, which means it's two Greek words shoved together to form a new word. Ek meaning out of, klesia from the Greek verb kalio meaning to call. So when you put these two together, it becomes ekklesia, called out ones. Let's just say ekklesia together. Oh, sounds great. Called out ones. So in ancient Greece, this word would have been used to describe an elected group of people that have been invited to sort of govern the city, to govern society, to order society so that humanity can flourish, like a parliament. And that's how it was used during the ancient world, and particularly in ancient Greece. And I kind of think that when Jesus' followers started using this word to describe what they were doing, they had that understanding of, we believe that we've been called out, elected by God himself to share in the rule and reign of Christ, to order society so that people can flourish in relationship with God. But there's a second meaning I just want to share with you, which was in the Roman Empire, you know, in the first century, when the Roman Empire was at its peak, when Caesar would gather his troops, his soldiers, to give them fresh marching orders, he would send out a summons. Now, the summons was called the ekkalio, literally the call out. And the soldiers would hear the summons and they would gather. And that gathering, that assembling was known as the ekklesia, the called out ones, the group of people that had responded to the summons. And as they gathered together in this assembly, Caesar would give them new commands. I want you to go to northern Greece. I want you to go here or there. I want you to extend the empire of Rome, essentially until Rome fills the whole earth. And I just have this suspicion that maybe the early followers of Jesus, like Peter, James, and John, and Paul, and Barnabas, and these guys, sort of over time just thought, what can we, you know, what word can we use to describe what we're doing as we're gathering together to worship Christ and to unpack the scriptures? And I don't know who came up with it, but maybe they said, oh, you know that term ekklesia? Like, because we believe that we're the true called out ones. Like that God has called us out, you know, so we're under not the lordship of Caesar, we're under the lordship of Jesus, and he's given us marching orders, not to extend the empire of Rome, but to extend the kingdom of God throughout the earth. So why don't we just borrow that term in the most subversive way possible and just begin to describe ourselves as the true ekklesia? And I'm guessing there might have been some fist bumps and high fives. Great, I love it. Let's describe ourselves as the ekklesia. I'm just imagining all of this, but this is my home. brunch. And if we use that understanding of what it means to be church, like this group of called out people to govern, to order society so that people can flourish in relationship with God, and this kind of military understanding used by the Romans, I want to offer this, hopefully it will appear on the screen as a definition. The church is a worldwide community under the lordship of Jesus through which God's purposes for the world are to be realized. I want to start there, because that reminds us of who we are, that actually we're part of a worldwide community, a worldwide body. Like, we're just one little branch. We're like the KXC King's Cross branch, and there's other King's Cross branches, and there's a Clerkenwell branch, and there's branches all over London. There's branches all over the world. But when you add them all together, you've got this worldwide community proclaiming that Caesar isn't Lord, that Jesus is Lord, and living to see God's purposes for the world come to pass. That is our core as the church. And here in King's Cross, we want to see God's will being done all around us. But that definition raises another question, which is, well, what are God's purposes for King's Cross? What are God's purposes for your community, for your workplace, for the street on which you live? And to fully answer that question, I think you need to like immerse yourself in the biblical story, the grand story of God engaging with creation and with humanity. And that's what we spend a lot of time doing here at KXC, immersing people in the story so that we can find our belonging, our purpose, and our hope in this story and nowhere else. So let me just read this quote. This is an Austrian philosopher, Ivan Illich, who said this: "Neither revolution nor reformation can ultimately change a society. Rather, you must tell a new powerful tale, one so persuasive that it sweeps away the old myths and becomes the preferred story, one so inclusive that it gathers all the bits of our past and our present into a coherent whole, one that even shines some light into our future so that we can take the next step. If you want to change a society, then you have to tell an alternative story." If you want to transform society, you've got to tell an alternative story. We belong to the greatest story ever told. Begins in Genesis, ends in Revelation. That's our story, and we want to immerse ourselves in that story. And as you do immerse yourself in that story, you begin to understand the purposes of God, the heart of God for his creation. So I want to have 10 minutes of your time to immerse you in narrative theology. Do I have permission? 10 minutes of your time. No, I'm going to do it anyway. So here we go. I'm going to take you on a 10-minute sort of like little theological journey through the scriptures. At KXC, we often summarize the grand narrative as a story that moves from creation to decreation to recreation. Creation is the story told in Genesis 1 and 2, where we're introduced to God, to his character, his nature, his phenomenal love. And out of the overflow of that love, he creates humanity in his image and likeness. And in the Garden of Eden, we see that there's no sin, no sickness, no suffering. Humanity are fully alive, flourishing in relationship with their creator. I mean, they are running around naked, living the dream in this beautiful, beautiful garden. So that's the beginning. That's what we were made for. But then sin enters the story. And I think sin is best defined as like selfishness, like the bent towards narcissism, where it's all about us. As we regularly quote Martin Luther on this, the Reformation theologian, he said, sin is a life turned in on itself, and everything becomes about you. Not your will be done, we say to God, but no, I'd rather my will be done. And as that mindset begins to multiply, pain and suffering and violence enter the story. So Cain kills his brother Abel, and nations turn against nations, and violence begets violence. And you have this absolute low point in Genesis 6 where it says the earth was filled with violence and God's heart was filled with pain. And if you read Genesis 1 and 2, you knew that the plan was that Adam and Eve would be placed in the Garden of Eden. And they would look after this garden, and they would extend the garden, and they would keep on extending the garden until the garden filled the earth. And only then would the whole earth be filled with the presence of God, the blessing of God, and the glory of God. But in Genesis 6, the opposite has happened. The earth has been filled with violence, not God's blessing, violence, and God's heart is filled with pain. That's almost one of the low points of the whole narrative of Scripture. And then we have a turning point in Genesis 12, the calling of Abraham and the calling on Israel to be the vehicle through which God brings healing and restoration and redemption and reconciliation. But Israel completely screw up and neglect their calling. So the climactic moment of the whole story is the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And the Gospels are the story of how God wraps himself in human flesh, enters the story, lives, dies, rises to new life, to usher in a new creation, to put right what had been put wrong at the fall. And the end of our story, and I love to tell the end of our story because it's so beautiful. And one of the things that causes me pain is how the church hasn't communicated the end of the narrative well. So much so that if we were to hit the streets of King's Cross, you can try it in Camino afterwards, and ask people like what they understand to be the end of the Christian story. A lot of people would say, well, I don't know, but I think they believe that basically when you die, you leave your body behind and your soul ascends to like this disembodied bliss. It's up there somewhere. Just keep going really, really far. Eventually, you're going to hit some angels riding on clouds, drinking Red Bull, playing the harp. And your soul will just hang out with them for all eternity in this disembodied bliss. Now, that's quite a fun end to the story. It's just got nothing to do with the New Testament. It's got everything to do with Greek philosophy and a philosopher called Plato. The end of our story is actually very different. Rather than us leaving our bodies behind and ascending to some sort of disembodied bliss, if you read the end of our story, Revelation 21 and 22, heaven comes down. And God comes down and makes his dwelling place with humanity. And as God and humanity become one, as heaven and earth become one, the Apostle John, who's writing this book, Revelation, he's writing down this vision. He says, look, as heaven and earth become one, I can see it. Like, suddenly there's no death and there's no grief and there's no crying and there's no pain. The former things, in other words, decreated order, created order that's unraveled because of sin, decreated order is passing away and the new creation is coming about all around. And then John writes down these epic words. He could see God in this vision sitting down on his throne saying, behold, I'm making all things new. Now, the reason that is so beautiful is you need to know a tiny little bit of Greek. In the Greek language, there's two words for new. There's neos, which means brand new. There's kainos, that is something old that's made new. It's restored to its former glory. And when God sits down on his throne in Revelation 21, he says, behold, I'm making all things kainos. Not, oh, I'm going to scrap up this first effort. Adam and Eve totally messed it up. I'll do away with that. No, he's going to restore it to how it was meant to be. Do you remember Eden? No sin, no sickness, no suffering. Humanity fully alive in relationship with God. God's going to restore everything to how it was made to be. That's the end of our story. Heaven and earth becoming one. God renewing all things, making all things new. Now, I think it was the philosopher Goethe that once said, a man's life or a woman's life is shaped by the end he lives for. I don't know what end you're living for, but if you're immersed in this story and that's the end you're living for, we want to be shaped by that end in the here and now. We want our lives to point towards this phenomenal ending that is to come. That's why our vision statement is to serve God's purpose to make all things new. So if that's the story, how do we go about pursuing that vision? And the answer is we want to follow the model of Jesus. So if you've got a Bible, Philippians chapter 2, we're going to race through it. This is Paul teaching the church in Philippi how they pursue the purposes of God. And he basically quotes a worship song that they would have been singing in the early church. So we're going to read from verse 6. I'm going to read it rather than sing it because I just think you'll prefer it that way. But this hymn has three verses, and in these three verses, this hymn of Christ, we're introduced to how God goes about fulfilling this story of making all things new. So verse 6, it says, Christ, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. That's verse 1. Oh. Beautiful. And with a good melody, with a good chord sequence, you know that would have worked well in the early church. What's Paul saying? What's the first move God makes in mission? And the answer is he wraps himself in human flesh. Theologians refer to this as the incarnation. Greek word incarne literally means in flesh. Wraps himself in human flesh, steps into the pain. Steps into decreation, steps into the suffering, born as a first century Jew under the oppressive Roman regime. The first move God makes in mission is towards the hurting, towards the broken, towards those that are lost, towards those that are far from him. And if that's the first move God makes in mission, that should be the first move we make in mission, towards the pain, towards those that are hurting, towards those in suffering. So God steps into the pain. That's verse 1. Let's keep reading verse 2. This is actually verse 8. That's confusing, isn't it? And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on the cross. So incarnation, God wraps himself in human flesh. The second move God makes is all of the sin that led to decreation, that led to created order, unraveling and pain and suffering enter the story. All of that sin is loaded upon Jesus at the cross. And he takes that sin to the grave and he triumphs over that sin and he triumphs over death and he rises to new life so that sin didn't need to be the last word over our lives. That there's a pathway through sin towards fullness of life. And that's the message of the cross. And that's why Paul would say, like, I'm not ashamed of this message because it's the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes. I'm going to communicate this message because this is how people experience fullness of life. So verse 1, the first move God makes is towards the pain. He steps into created order in order to heal and restore. Second move he makes, he takes on our sin, triumphs over it at the cross. And the third verse then, which is actually verse 9. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that's above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Verse 3 is a reference to the ascension, but more than that, to the resurrection, that Jesus is raised, triumphs over death, the firstborn of the new creation. So in this hymn, you have, like Paul beginning to teach the church in Philippi, and he'd want to teach us here in King's Cross. This is how God fulfills this story of making all things new. He wraps himself in human flesh in the person of Jesus. He dies for us and he rises to new life. And you could summarize the posture of Jesus towards culture with these three statements. Number one, he stands in culture. In the church, we talk a lot about being countercultural, right? I love to be countercultural, you know, going against the flow. Yes, that's right. But the first posture is we stand in culture. We don't stand apart, shouting a message, telling people what to do. No, we stand in the culture. Second thing Jesus did then, he stood against the culture. And that's what we see at the cross. He stands against the evil and injustice in the culture so that he can offer the new culture, which is the culture of the kingdom of God, the culture of the new creation. This is how we engage with London culture. We stand in the culture so that we can stand against the evil and injustice within the culture so that we can offer the new culture, the culture of the kingdom of God. And three words that we love to use here at KXC that maybe are the virtues that we perfectly see embodied in the life of Jesus, that he was a man of compassion. His heart broke when he saw pain and suffering. How many times in the Gospels does it say that, you know, he had compassion on dot, dot, dot? You know, his heart broke and it moved him into action. A man of compassion, a man of courage. Like pursuing death, even death on a cross, obedient to death on a cross, courageously pursuing his Father and obedience to his Father, and creativity, ushering in the new creation. And this is who we want to become as a church. We want to be known as a community of compassion, of courage, that we courageously proclaim the good news of Jesus and live our faith out in the world, and a community of creativity. So let's just break these three words down. Let's start with compassion. How amazing just to hear the story of like Dan setting up a CAP center here. The way things work at KXC is very rarely do we as a staff team say, we're going to do X and we want everyone to get on board. God puts dreams in people's hearts and we listen and just discern is that of you, Lord. And most of the time it is. And we're like, brilliant, go and do it. And we'll try and back you in prayer and with resources. And Dan and a number in the community began to, you know, have this stirring of like, we want to draw alongside those that are in debt. The Center for Social Justice, a political think tank, named five of the key drivers of poverty that rob people of fullness of life. Now, if our mission as a church is to, you know, serve God's purpose to make all things new, to be vehicles of restoration, that would be an issue for us, right? If there's serious debt robbing people of fullness of life, we would want to reach out, draw alongside, proclaim God's love in practical ways to them. So Dan started getting a team together, and now CAP is about to emerge. And what is the heartbeat of CAP? It's like very incarnational, right? We draw alongside those that are experiencing the dehumanizing effects of serious debt, and we love them, and we pray with them, and hopefully get the opportunity to introduce them to Jesus, but also help them in their journey out of debt into the black, where they can begin to live life more fully. Like, that's our heart. And there are so many ministries at KXC that have a similar heartbeat. So we run a brunch called the KX Brunch. Every Sunday morning, a number of our volunteers gather together, and then they open up the doors to a community center a couple of minutes down the road. And 40 or so rough sleepers come for breakfast, for brunch. And there's loads of bacon sarnies and coffee and orange juice and whatever else. But way more importantly than that, a beautiful community is being formed. A number of the brunch community are part of this family and come on Sundays. And it's been amazing to see them become part of this community at KXC. There's so many opportunities to serve. It's so simple just getting plugged in. Pentonville Prison. We've started partnering with Pentonville Prison. They run Prison Alpha there. They're seeing so many people come to faith. I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say this. If what's happening in Pentonville Prison happened in one of our churches, we would refer to it as like a revival, a mini revival. They are seeing dozens and dozens of prisoners come to faith. Like, their Prison Alpha is rammed. They have two services in the chapel at Pentonville Prison, and they're both now fully full. And they've basically said to the chaplain, we can't have any more prisoners in the chapel, so you're going to have to start turning prisoners away. So they are turning prisoners away on Sunday who want to go to church but can't get in. So they got in touch with us and said, look, could you help us run another service, a third service? And we're like, yes, we can. We'll send volunteers because God's doing something and we want to bless what God is doing. Again, so simple. Maybe some of you have a heart for just drawing alongside people in prison and loving them and proclaiming the gospel to them. Well, you could get plugged in with Pentonville Prison. London City Mission. We have a beautiful friendship with London City Mission, and they do amazing work with the vulnerable people of King's Cross and all over London. But they started partnering with us on the brunch, and they said, look, wouldn't it be amazing if we took a step beyond the brunch? What if London City Mission bought a home in King's Cross or close to King's Cross, where people maybe from the brunch community and others that we know on the streets in King's Cross, we could put them into a house and put community around them and maybe sort of give them some training so they can get a job, and then maybe in time they can get their own flat so that they can move out of this flat and begin to establish like their lives. And then we could create space for other people to move into the room that's now vacant. And we were like, that sounds awesome. What a great idea. And they're like, well, we'll buy the house because we can afford that. We'll buy the house, but could you put a befriending service around the house where people just hang out with these people that are coming off the streets? And would you draw them into community and just love them and go shopping with them and maybe teach them how to cook and help prepare them for their job interviews? And we were like, we would love to do that. Again, if that excites you, so many opportunities. XLP. We partner with XLP working with young people at risk of getting involved in gangs, which is a massive issue across London, but particularly here in King's Cross. For some of you that just love hanging out with young people, Wednesday night, all it would take once a month on a Wednesday evening, you go into maybe the bus project, they have a football project, they're about to start a mentoring scheme where you draw alongside people and just love them. And as you love them and develop friendships, it always opens doors into sharing your faith. Choices. We work with vulnerable mums and kids in King's Cross. They do amazing work that we just partner with them. We partner with a number of people running a women's drop-in for sex workers in King's Cross, just to provide a safe space for them to have community and receive prayer. There are so many opportunities. I'm aware that some of you, you're already serving at another organization, at another charity, or maybe you're doing stuff off your own back, in your street, in your local community. And if that's the case, we bless you. We love what you're doing. But for those that aren't, we want everyone at KXC to find a place to serve. Like, our dream here is that we create like a tidal wave that moves us towards compassion, courage, and creativity. Like, my prayer is, if you're new to the church, and let's say you're here for 2 years, my prayer is that after 2 years, you're more compassionate and brokenhearted, that you're more courageous in sharing your faith, and you're operating in greater creativity as a minister of the new creation. So if we're going to do that, if we're going to move people towards greater compassion, courage, and creativity, what we need are practices, right, that actually help people journey towards that, rather than, that's a nice idea, well, if it happens, then Billy bonus. No, we want to put practices in place that lead us towards it. What would a simple practice be? And we're saying this to the whole church. one evening a month. Just start really small. Like, I love casting big visions, right? But the next move once you've casted a big vision is just do something small, an incremental step towards it. Like one evening a month to serve maybe at XLP. Like one afternoon a month to go with Dan to visit someone in serious debt. One morning a month to be part of the befriending scheme with Choices. One evening a month for whatever else was on that list. Just find a place to get stuck in. And if you start in one ministry and after a couple of months you're like, I don't think that's really me. Can I try another one? Of course you can try another one. But our heart is, we would love to see everyone at KXE finding a place to serve and growing towards compassionate living. That our heart would break for the stuff that breaks the heart of God. So compassion, moving swiftly towards courage. We want to grow in boldness in proclaiming our faith. Like, we've seen a lot of people at KXE come back to faith. We've seen a lot of people join and come alive in their faith. We've seen a lot of people move to London and find home and community here. And we celebrate all of that. We haven't seen loads of people come to faith for the first time. We have seen a chunk through Alpha and people just rocking up on a Sunday. We would love to see more. We believe that Jesus alone brings fullness of life, and we want to introduce people to Jesus. So we want to develop a greater degree of courage to proclaim our faith and to live out our faith in the world. So what would responses be? What would a practice be? Like, number one, this is so simple. This is the incremental step. Invite someone to Alpha. Like, really straightforward. We looked at some of the research from Barna, and we looked at this last week, and the state of the church and people in this kind of society, how they view the church and view spirituality. And there's like a shift, there's like a paradigm shift, if you like, going on. So we've spoken for quite a long time that we live in a post-Christian context. But sociologists begin to say, no, we live in a post-secular context now. Like, people are opting out of the secular narrative, and there's a deep longing for spirituality and something transcendent. And from the research, it basically came out that 20% of the population would be really interested in getting plugged in a local church. Almost 20% said they would love to experience the love of Christ. Like, people are hungry. So imagine your phone now and your, you know, a contact list. 20%, one in five names of your non-Christian mates, they would love to experience the love of Christ. If they were invited, they would love to come to church. And yet we're shrinking back and not telling them and not inviting them. Why don't you start one mate? Come to the Alpha meal. And if they like it, they can come to the whole course. And that's this Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. at the Depot Point. So that's Alpha. But we want to grow in courage as a church. So one of the things we've decided to do is we're going to start a new congregation. So in a month's time, the 6th of November, we're going to go from two services to three services. So the Archbishop William Temple, Archbishop from quite a long time ago, he once said this very famous quote. He said, the church is the only institution that exists for the benefit of its non-members. So we exist for those that aren't in the room yet. For our non-Christian friends that aren't in the room yet because they don't know Jesus. We gather for their sake, as well as to obviously to worship God and unpack the scriptures. We exist for the benefit of our non-members. I want to do a quick exercise. Close your eyes if you're happy to do that. Don't worry, no one's going to kiss you or stroke your knee or anything inappropriate. So just close your eyes. I want you to imagine in the empty seat next to you, one of your friends that doesn't know Jesus, but in a year's time, they're with you here at KXE, worshiping God, learning from the scriptures, receiving prayer from one another. And then just begin to imagine, like, who could that person be? If one in every five on your address book would really be up for visiting church, quite hungry to experience the love of Christ, like, who are those people? Just imagine them sat next to you in the empty seat to your left or right. Okay, you can come round. I'm hoping people came to mind, right? I'm really hoping there were people like, wow, I wonder if they'd be interested. There's a problem with the exercise, though. Apart from right there, no one has empty seats beside them. Like, maybe a handful in the room have an empty space beside them. Research suggests that when a church is 80% full, it stops growing. Because psychologically, people walk in, they see that it's rammed and think, I'm not sure I could belong here. There isn't space for me. All of this is at a subconscious level. So for newcomers, there would have been newcomers tonight who walked in, saw that it was rammed downstairs and don't know about the balconies and think, there's probably not room for me here. And you lose a whole load of people through the back door. We long for people to come to know Jesus. And we long for people to find home and experience fullness of life in a community centered around Jesus. We need to create space for them. We need to create space for them. So what we're going to do, we're going to move to three services. We will be one church, three congregations. So we'll meet across two venues here and then just down the road, like 30 yards down the road at Winton Primary School. One church, three congregations. But all of the services will have the same values, the same vision, will be in the same teaching series. It'll just be different people at the different congregations. The first one, morning, be 10 o'clock in a primary school, literally 30 yards down that street on Killick Street. All our kids' work will be at the 10 a.m. service. In terms of the growth of KXC, the demographic we've grown least through is families. And on our doorstep in King's Cross in Islington are so many young families that don't know Jesus. We want to create space for them. And we've heard from talking to loads of families that a morning service would be far more fruitful. That an afternoon service is pretty tough for families. Like at the end of the service, you're dashing home to feed the kids, shove them in a bath and get them to bed. Obviously a bit more gracious than shoving them, but you know, you get the idea. Whereas morning just creates space for like community and Sunday lunch. So we're going to create space by opening up a morning congregation. The afternoon, this first service that we do is 4 p.m., but we're going to push it back half an hour because the Ethiopian church is growing. They've asked for sort of more time. We're like, that's amazing that you're growing. Absolutely. So we'll push that one back to 4:30, and then this one, the 6:30, will remain. So the final two will be the Ethiopian church and the morning one at Winton Primary School. I want to ask you a question then. If there's going to be a whole lot more space, because I'm guessing some in this room might think, I want to be with the families, I'm going to go in the morning. I'm guessing, I'm hoping all the families at the 4 will move because there won't be kids work at the 4 anymore or the 4:30. There's going to be a whole lot more space. I just want to ask you the question, like, who could you invite to church? Like, who could you invite to church? Like, to draw into this community, to draw into this story of God making all things new. Final thing on courage is we want to celebrate acts of courage. We want to collect stories of people being obedient to the promptings of the Spirit. So whether that be you inviting someone to Alpha, praying for someone in your workplace, having a prophetic word over some random guy on the bus, praying for healing for your flatmate, whatever courage looks like for you. And we're not just talking like big acts of courage, like even the really small ones, like taking your colleague that intimidates you out for lunch, whatever it might be, forgiving someone who's really peed you off. Whatever courage looks like, we want to collect the stories. Stories of success and stories of failure, because stories are gifts that stretch faith levels. That's why the Jewish people told their story, the Exodus story, again and again and again. Why did they tell the story? Because every time they told the story, faith levels began to rise. Like, our God parts like seas to liberate us. And if he can part seas, then he can probably do dot. Faith levels rise. We want to collect stories. So we want to invite you to be courageous. What would an act of courage look like for you? And then we want you to go to the website, kxc.org.uk/stories, and just let us know how it went. You know, the story of you praying for someone, the story of you sharing your faith. We want to collect the stories. And then what we're going to try and do is we're going to try and tell some of the stories on Sundays just to stir up faith levels because we want to grow in courage. I'll finish with this. We want to grow in creativity. The very best way to shape culture is to create culture. I'll say that again. The very best way to shape culture is to create culture. So a brilliant book, if you're the reading type, Culture Making by Andy Crouch. He talks about the five postures that he sees the church has towards the surrounding culture. He says in some wings of the church, the posture is we're just going to condemn everything outside the church. And we're just going to sort of like call it out and disagree. And in that posture, the church is simply known as what it's against. But that's one posture. The second posture, he says, is you see some churches that they're less aggressive and maybe more passive aggressive, and they just stand back and just critique. Oh, I wouldn't have done that. No. And I wouldn't have done it for these different philosophical reasons or theological reasons. And we stand at a safe distance and critique. Thirdly, we just copy the culture. We take Coldplay and just add our own lyrics, and you know, that's modern worship essentially. And there's nothing wrong with that because we love Coldplay here at KXE. We'll not have a bad word said about Coldplay. But you can see it happening in the church where we just copy the culture around us. Fourth posture is you see people just consuming the culture. Like I've heard of churches where they gather together, they sing a couple of songs, and then they just watch a TED talk. Don't really open the scriptures. They just consume what's on offer in the culture around. And what Andy Crouch says is that actually all four of those first, you know, postures in their right place are fine. Like there are moments where we as the church have to condemn what's happening in the culture around. Some of the evil and the injustice that we've just got to call it out and say, no, that is wrong. We've got to make our stand. There are moments where we critique the culture, where we thoughtfully engage with the culture around us. There are moments where we copy the culture. You know, there are moments where that is fine. We take the best of what's on offer and we learn from it and adapt. There are moments, and it's hard to find many examples, where we do consume the culture, where we see what's best in the culture and we just enjoy it for what it is, if it's in line with the values of the kingdom. But our primary posture is to create culture. We create culture. So what does creating culture look like? Well, firstly, we want to engage in the journey and adventure of church planting. So in the next few years, we will be planting churches. We're 6 years old. We haven't planted churches yet. But we feel like now is probably a really good time to send out team, to send out life, to bring life to other parts of London. The London Diocese, their vision is to plant 100 worshipping communities by 2020. It's called the Capital Vision. 100 new churches by 2020. I think they're 30 or so in. So they've got a lot to go. We want to play our part in that vision. So we're in conversations with the bishop, a couple of bishops actually. We're in conversations with some churches around us in London about how we could partner with them to see new churches come alive. And just so you know, I'm so excited about that. It's going to be painful. It's going to involve us recklessly giving ourselves away to guard each other and the people of London, because we're going to be sending out friends and some of our best leaders to take teams off and plant new churches. But that's how you shape culture, by creating culture. So we want to plant churches, but more than that, we want to plant businesses. Like we want to plant schools. Like we want to plant hospitals. I mean, not right now. It would totally kill us. But if you look back through the history of the church in the UK, you know that like the education system we have now is essentially like the church trying to provide education for every kid in this country. A lot of the big schools that are well known were like church, like led schools. You know, university, a lot of our universities were the church trying to provide education to leaders, particularly to some of the vicars that were being trained. They started as theological colleges and then became universities. A lot of the businesses, the church engaging in culture. Barclays Bank was started by a group of Quakers. They wanted to find a different way of banking that had integrity and justice and being fair at the heart of who they are. Like, these were Christians that thought, we're going to shape culture by creating culture. And yeah, we want to start churches, but we want to start schools, we want to start hospitals, and we want to start businesses. And obviously, like, this is huge, but this is our trajectory, because we want to engage in the culture around us. And we want to start a school of creativity that I don't have time to tell you about, but I'm really excited about, where we create a gym where we just begin to stretch our creative muscles and learn how to figure out how can we be ministers of the new creation. We won't quote Peter Wagner, although he's a good guy. So art co-working, two doors up the road, we've created this co-working space because we want to be a home for new businesses. We want to see new social enterprises being birthed. We want to see freelancers begin to dream big about how they can have social impact here in King's Cross and beyond. We've created a co-working space called Art Co-working. So if you go to artcoworking.com, you can find out more about it. And our vision for Art Co-working is simple. Can you remember Noah's Ark? Remember the story of Noah's Ark? Some of you will know a song about it. But imagine the ark. Just picture the ark, if you like, in your mind's eye, rammed full of life. Like every animal known to man and woman just on the ark, two of them, male, female, plant life. It was this boat rammed full of life so that from that boat, the new creation could emerge and begin to spread once the floods had subsided. A boat rammed full of life, bringing new life to creation. That's our vision for Ark Co-working. We want that building that we have for the next 3.5 years to be rammed full of life, of new businesses, like an incubator space for creatives and freelancers and people that have a dream of impacting their communities with new ways of doing business and new ways of doing dot, dot, dot. We want to ram that place with life. So that's going to be part of our journey in the coming years. We want to invest in the Ark Co-working space and community. So that would be the summary. We want to grow in compassion, all those different ministries. Find one of them and give one evening a month to serve. We want to grow in courage, like invite friends to Alpha, invite them to the one of the three services, the three congregations we're launching. We want to celebrate acts of courage, and we want to move towards creativity. That's the vision. We are so excited about it. I'll finish with this quote. I think it was Martin Luther King once said, "Dream things with God so big they're doomed to failure unless God's in them." Dream things with God so big they're doomed to failure unless God's in them. We think we're dreaming pretty big, like beyond our ability to deliver, just so you know. So we're going to need the power of God, the equipping power of God's Spirit. So we're just going to close by standing together.